Welcome to Voices in the Wilderness, conversations about church and leader health. Thank you so much for listening. We encourage you to keep the conversation going. Voices in the Wilderness is brought to you by Preparing for Amazement Ministries, where we empower and equip leaders and churches to create lasting and transformational health. Visit amazed15.org to learn more. We also welcome any comments or suggestions. Simply email us at podcast@amazed15.org. My name is Marcus Carlson, and today our guest is Jeremy Cook. Welcome, Jeremy.
Hello, Marcus. How are you, man?
Hey, it's good to have you, and I'm excited because you are officially our first Canadian guest, second international guest, so kind of excited about that. And for our next several podcasts, we're walking through the habits of healthy churches, taking one podcast episode for each of the seven habits from the book. And today we're looking at habit three, healthy churches make decisions in a healthy way. So I'm excited to talk to you about that. But first, would love to have you share a little bit about you and kind of your ministry experience and background.
Sure. Yeah, it's great to be here. I'm a third generation pastor. So both my grandfathers, my dad was a pastor, just retired. I've got like eight couples that are in full-time ministry kind of in my family. And so sort of grew up seeing what church life looked like. And so that means I got to see the best parts of it and the worst parts of it. And somewhere along the way, had that calling on my own life, which was an important part, recognizing that the Lord would call me and not just my family. And so kind of cool way that he did that for me, which I won't get into here. But that led me then into, you know, this love that I had for the local church and going, okay, well, how could I use my gifts and abilities in that sense? And so kind of did the steps, as you would imagine. I did kind of Bible school, that sort of stuff, started working at this current church that I'm serving at, was the first church that I was ever at. I started as the junior high youth pastor, and then I was like all of kind of junior high, senior high, young adults, did that for a season. Then I did like the missions pastor type role here, created that, worked that through. Then what we call the senior associate pastor, so a lot of staff leadership here on our campuses. And then I left for a year and a bit. I went and did some denominational work. So I was called the assistant district superintendent. And so we had kind of four provinces that we were responsible for there. So I had about 72 churches I was working with. Did that for a while. And then in my departure, there was, you know, kind of change of leadership here at Shore Park Alliance Church, where I currently serve, and was invited back as a lead pastor. And so began kind of making that transition back last summer. And have kind of headed into it in the fall. So that's sort of the things that I've kind of done and the places that I've been working. Lots of love and affection for kind of global mission and how do we work well with churches and working well together, and really love working with the young leaders. And so get to spend as much as time as my schedule will allow kind of raising up this next generation of leaders in what so many senior leaders did for me. And so as I've kind of come back here, part of that commitment is to say, how do we equip this next generation to come, particularly with, we've got a Christian school here and all these kind of things. So how do we help emerging leaders? And so love these conversations about how do we have healthy leaders? Because seeing it growing up with it, certainly, and what that looks like in a healthy and unhealthy way. And then certainly got to see that in a district role where you were just, if there was a mess, that's when they called you. You know something about that,
right? Yeah. yeah, nobody calls me, not many people call me with good news, for sure.
Yeah, it's not how it goes. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. And that's a fairly large church, correct?
Yeah, I mean, it's especially for Canadian standards, we don't have kind of mega churches the same way that the US does. We have kind of much smaller churches typically, but we've got 1300 students on site here 5 days a week as part of their public school alternative program, which again is very unique in our country to have that. Like, we're probably one of one in that model, and so it's complicated, but an amazing privilege to be able to do that. And then yeah, our weekend attendance or something would be 1200 or so in the room, and then kind of online and all that other stuff. But yeah, unique for us in Canada here for sure.
And so, and obviously doing kind of the district leadership stuff and working with churches, you've seen a bit. So what have you like learned over your career and your time in ministry? What have you learned about the unhealthy ways that churches make decisions?
Yeah, there's a number of problems that you kind of start with when you walk into a place because they're common enough that you sort of go, it's probably one of these. One of them certainly is very reactionary type leadership. It's the urgent, right, over the important. And so it's just kind of running from one fire to the next. And one of the ways that that's super unhealthy is that inevitably then when there's not a fire, the leaders don't know what to do because they're not used to that. And sometimes they create fires, right? Because that's how they find their, that's how they know how to lead, or that's how they know how to kind of move people along. And so it becomes very interesting where it's like some of these churches just have crisis after crisis after crisis after crisis. And you have to ask yourself, why is that here and not in many other environments? And so that reactive leadership is really a challenge for many. Another challenge, particularly when we're working with the generations that are coming next, is this very hierarchical top-down, you know, one or two or three people made a decision, and now we're expecting thousands of people just to fall in line with it. And that, I mean, I don't know that that ever worked super well long-term, but it certainly doesn't work today. And the latest kind of data that's coming out, even with Gen Z and some of this the real younger emerging generations, like they want co-creation, not just collaboration, but co-creation.
I love
that. So how do you do that? Yeah. So how do you do that in systems where it's like, well, we've got a board, or we've got governors, or we've got deacons, or whoever it is, and then our lead pastor is just going to decide. And one of the things I just know around here is that it's like, I got a staff team of 32 church side, and we've got 120 in the school, teachers, faculty. Like, I don't decide anything, really. I work together to try to help us discern communally how we're gonna do this. And so that leadership style of just get in line because here's where we're going is causing a lot of problems now, especially in a world where people are more willing to call out those abuses than maybe they previously were. So that's another area that becomes quite problematic. And then maybe the last one I'd throw that I just worked a lot with over the last year is very little like long-term vision. So there's a scarcity mindset. We're just trying to not close our doors. We're just trying to, you know, keep the thing going, hire the next leader, whatever it is. But when you ask the question, why, or, you know, like, what's your unique calling that God's placed on this congregation in this community for this time? Very few answers to those questions. And so people will chase, you know, well, it was the Willow model. Now it's the Saddleback model. Now we'll use a North Point model. Then insert, you know, church here model. And it's like, but those are like mega cities, you know, in their own unique way. And you're in the middle of rural Canada. Like, what? That's not going to work, you know?
Right.
But they don't have that vision, and they don't have that understanding of I think what God's called them uniquely to do. And so then they struggle. And so they only deal with what's right in front of them. So no long-term planning to say, okay, this is what God's called of this community of believers. And then let's go out and find leaders and pastors and staff that are going to help us live that out. Instead, they just hire the best leader they think they can find. And that person, maybe trying to take them in the complete opposite direction of what the Lord would have for that church, and then various dysfunctions, you know, follow.
And that pretty much doesn't matter the size of the church. That's happening.
Doesn't
in churches
matter.
Of all sizes. Yeah.
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 Some of our biggest ones, same problem as the small ones. If you looked at it, it's just economies of scale on it, but it was really the same core issue.
Interesting. Yeah. And I always tell people, Jesus is Lord, but context is king. And, you know, even Jesus did ministry in context. And I don't think we like reflect on context, you know, all these problems you talk about, from like authoritarianism to reactionism to, you know, trying to chase the newest fad. I mean, that's a similar story here, just south, you know, just south of you all, for sure.
Well, what's interesting on that, too, is like, if you don't know that you're just kind of cutting and pasting a model from somewhere. Like, how does the average layperson know, all of the models of kind of church structure or multiplication, whatever it is? They generally don't know. So what happens is you find one that's robust, someone wrote a book on it, and you go, well, here it is. Like, they're growing, here's the game plan. So then they bring it into their context. And probably one of the gifts that I brought just coming from church to church to church was simply looking at it and going, oh, I see that. I know what this model is. This is not your model. This is a Saddleback model. And then there'd be this sheet about like, here's how we do this. I was like, no, that's how Willow Creek did that. That's not how you did it. That's how they did. And they were shocked that I could recognize it, but it was simply because I lived in those circles. And so what you begin to realize is that the congregation itself, unless they're deeply invested in looking at all that stuff, they're not going to know, right? They're not going to know that that's somebody
No, they
else's
just come to
model.
worship.
And so they show up and they go, well, that seems good, and that church looks big, so let's give it a go. Instead of actually doing the hard work to go, okay, Jesus, what have you done in our history? What are you continuing to ask us to do? What ought we pay attention to? And we talk about all the time around here, like, if Jesus is the functional head of our church, we should probably ask him, what do you have for us in planning? What are you
Minor
gonna
detail,
do
right?
with us? Yeah, like, and so for Christmas services, and we're doing this for Easter right now, it's like I had a message written. We pause at the very early in the planning. We just say, Jesus, what would you have for this? And as we communally discern together the themes, it was like, oh, my message doesn't fit that theme. So I, as the senior leader, went and wrote a different message because it
Right.
was to work with the group, to work with what we think Jesus was asking us to do. So I got one in the can for you if you need one.
Oh, well,
But it's
good. You
like,
know, I
that's
mean,
the that's the that's the piece of this, right? It's like actually walk this thing out together.
well, I'll take it and I'll try to preach it with a Canadian accent. And
There you go. It'll be better that way.
yeah, and say process instead of process, for example,
That's right.
yeah.
That's right. That's right.
What what from your experience, and obviously in Canada and certainly in the US, in other places, there's not a lot of young leaders like you. That have risen to kind of the positions that you have in large churches and in denominational leadership. What, like, from your experience, what you've learned so far, and we're always learning, what do you think churches can do to make decisions in a healthy way? Whether it's a simple decision like, a sermon series to a big decision about like the vision and direction of the congregation.
I think managing expectations is really important. So like who gets to make the decision? Who has decision rights? Declaring those things early and often so people understand like, oh, this part's for the board, or this part's for the congregation as a whole, or this part's for the executive team, or this part's our ministry lead team, or this is the volunteers of this area. They're going to actually decide this. And so what I've tried to live with is to say, as much that I can push downward in the organization to give away ministry as much as possible, it is a joy is to work together on that. And I see my role largely as keeping people out of the ditches. But if you're on the road and you're going, it's like, yeah, that's fine. I don't feel strongly about that. It's a term I use often in meetings. Everyone eventually sort of looks at you to go, well, what do you think, lead pastor? And I'll just say, I don't feel strongly about that. Now, if I do feel strongly about that, I'll let it be known. But mostly it's to say, how do we help our people make kind of healthy decisions together? And then, to your kind of reference there about sort of the age and the stage that I get to do a number of these things in, largely it's been because I've had great mentors and great leaders around me who allowed me to contribute and allowed me to think it through. And it was like I was able to walk on the tightrope early. But there was still a net so I wouldn't die when I fell. Like I'd fall, but I wouldn't crack my skull open. It was like, oh man, I learned on that, but I'd do it differently next time. But it was a good place that way. And so trying to do that for others and bringing those leaders in, but the managing expectations is really important because if you unintentionally signal that like, hey, we all have equal decision making right on everything. We're socialists, we're all gonna just kind of figure this out together. Well, if that isn't lived out, it feels unauthentic, and it creates friction points. And so it's to say, no, everybody's voice matters on that. And we've tried to really expand on that with the Working Genius stuff that I know you know lots about. And so even with Easter planning, we brought in people who were Wonder People who have never been in an Easter planning meeting before, but
Oh,
we
that's
wanted to
awesome.
leverage their genius in that. And so we had, and I'll say this, the staff member who gave kind of the most unique insight that's going to shape kind of our whole lobby experience in coming in is a young staff member, and her current role is she works the front desk for us. And she made this amazing contribution and had never been in a meeting like that before. And we were better off to have her in there. So it's helping people have the expectations. Now, we also told those same people, though, you don't come to the next meeting, right? Like you used your wonder, you contributed in a significant way here. Thank you. Now we're moving it down through the organization. Now we have people that are going to move towards implementation. So we need different people in the room now. But thank you for your unique contribution. And so trying to give more people voice where it matters and makes sense, because they have something brilliant to offer there, but then not putting the weight of pieces that aren't going to be in their forte or in their wheelhouse, or they're not accountable for, and say, now you got to make this thing go. And so as we've managed expectations that way, both as like, here's my role, here's my job that I'm hired for, but then also here's kind of my working genius, here's my spiritual gifting, here's my experience, we get these really cool, cross department conversations that really help us move forward and be better simply because we've got a more rounded out experience.
Do you think it's easier to let go of control of decision making in a larger church? Or is that more dependent on personality than the size of the church and your experience?
Yeah, there's certain, I mean, there's definitely a personality thing to that, and how willing are you to empower others and to release, some of that is certainly there. I think what I would say, and even the history of this church is that like it, if you can't let it go, things will explode faster because there's so many moving pieces. One human being cannot hold all of this. You're the bottleneck for so many things. In a smaller church, you can actually control it all and manage it all. And it might actually even work well for a good amount of time because the volume that's coming at you is just not it's not the same. But certainly, leaders, I think these days that are going to manage any of these types of environments, you just got to be good at the galvanizing part, to use the working genius language of helping bring people along, help move them forward, but not have to ultimately decide everything. It's just unhealthy for the leader to try and have to manage all of that. So the sooner you're willing to admit you're not the smartest person in the room, the better, and get the smartest people you can find around you. And particularly at my age, one of the things I recognized really early was I'm not going to be the smartest person in the room. I'm not going to be the most educated person in the room, but I could be the best leader in the room. And part of that is going to listen well, understand people's different gifts and abilities, try to deploy them into areas of strength for them, round out areas of weakness on a team that I was able to kind of pay attention to. And then I just sort of filled in those gaps along the way. And that has served us fairly well as we've gone forward. But certainly there's a generational thing to this too,
Oh,
Marcus, I
for
would
sure.
say, of the styles of leadership, right? So that, kind of I'm gripping the stick too tight, as we would say. And it's just like I have to make every decision, and that's where a lot of the conflict is coming from relationally between generations in leadership is an older style that was, thus saith the Lord, here it
Right, more
comes, and that's been
authoritarian. Yeah.
hard, yeah,
Yeah.
and
You
that's been really
earn your
hard as the next
position by
generations come. That's right,
age and
that's right.
time. Yeah. And so, yeah, absolutely. Well, and one of the things I'm realizing, as I lead different things is, that even if I have a strong opinion, I don't have to express it. And a lot of times my job is only to break a tie, right? Or, as you say, you talk about making sure people don't go in the ditches, living in Colorado for 8 years, driving in mountains, being the guardrail. Like, we can scratch up the car,
Totally.
right? Like, you know, we can even walk away with some minor injuries, but we can't go off the side of the mountain kind of thing. And one of the things that I've been thinking about, especially this Lenten season, and even preached about this on Ash Wednesday, is, you know, especially in this culture where things are moving fast and things are very potent right now and very divided and very intense and overwhelming and chaotic, is this idea of how do we move away from being reactive to being more reflective? That those are kind of the two choices. We can react or we can reflect. And when I think about this in terms of decision making, how do we do practical theological reflection? Because I think sometimes we do one or the other, if we do any reflection at all. Like, we either do the practical thing, like, oh, this is what's going to work pragmatically. Or we do the theological thing selectively, you know, this is the theological thing. And I know, as we've worked together, you know, through Kairos and all that stuff, we've had some interesting conversations about practical theological reflection. What's kind of been your experience with some of that stuff?
Yeah, we use a line, we want anecdotes and analytics. We want to be able to build these worlds together. And so, you know, we start by going, you know, towards the Father's heart for what we're doing and the ministry that we have. And so it's like, okay, God, what would you have? What would you say about this? Help us discern the things we can't see. But the assumption there then is there are things you can see.
Right.
So let's talk about the parts that you can see. And so the you know, the difficulty at times of trying to live in sort of this week to week reactive reality is, oh, you know, attendance was high or it was a low, or giving's high or it's low. And it's like, dude, don't look at that, you know, week to week, and let that manage your emotions and control, you know, your thinking. It's like, we'll start to pay attention to that now because we're halfway into the year. Like, what are our trends now at this point, not week to week, because you'll make poor decisions based on, you know, it was a good week or it was a bad week. And for us here in Canada, a good week or a bad week statistically can be 100% dependent on the weather and the snow. And can people even get in the building or not? So if you're going to live by, oh, no, we're feeling good this week, because I got a report, it was like, oh, we were 25-30% up over the last weekend's, you know, attendance or whatever. It's like, yeah, but it could have been a snow day last time. Maybe that was bad. Maybe we should have been 100% up, right?
Well, like, and weren't you, so you in Asia or something? So maybe stuff. It was just,
yeah, I was in Asia. Yeah. I was gone, so more people showed up. Yeah, more people come when I'm not here. It's a great growth strategy. Go away more. But yeah, that reactive kind of like, oh, what is right in front of us? And so we want good data. We want good stats. We track things like, I'm not that interested in a first donor. I'm really interested in a donor who contributed two times, because if they contributed two times, they'll probably contribute a third time and a fourth time. So we have strategies on that. We think about that. We track that. But at the same time, we want to make sure that there's all sorts of other elements that we're paying attention to, that we're thinking about, what are we doing in a holistic way, and how does this actually impact the person to give, and these types of questions, as opposed to just everything's driven through some sort of really strict framework. And I think everyone right now, I would say this with most of the churches that I was working with, are trying to redefine the metrics. Like, sure, we can, you know, what is it? You know, buildings, butts and bucks. We can measure the same three things that the church has historically always measured. How many people showed up? What did they give? And, you know, what's the state of our creations here? But there's got to be other metrics that we're paying attention to and that we think about and reflect on deeply. And when we have those things and we have the data of the stuff that we're measuring, it allows us to make better decisions than if we were to just kind of be fully dependent one way or the other.
And so if you were to give like just one simple piece of advice to churches of any size, whether pastor or lay leader, in terms of making healthy decisions, what would be the one key from your experience so far?
One thing I think is very unique, and is a good part of an exercise of your vision forward and a lot of sort of stuff, I think, is to go back to the origin story of your church, of your ministry, of whatever it is that you're doing. I'm pretty convinced that, you know, we'll say, like, here's our mission statement at our church. If your mission statement If your purpose statement, if your vision statement, I mean, people use all of these interchangeably, it's part of the madness. But if you could just take it and put it in any other church in any other context, I would say you're not done your work yet. Or how many churches have a version of this? Up, you know, out, in, or something like this, right? It's like choose your arrow. It's like everyone's talking about the same things. And I'm actually convinced the reason that the Lord has these different churches and different denominations and different communities is like we're all about the main thing. And Jesus is Lord, and we're going to worship him, and we're going to proclaim his death and resurrection, all those great things. But there's also a specific purpose that we're here for.
Right.
And generally, you see that more clearly in the origin story than you do in, you know, say the last decade or two, if you're an older congregation. And so for me, it's like, I think there's a lot of energy and there seems to be a lot of momentum when churches sort of recapture their original identity. And as churches kind of struggle and who are we and what are we trying to do? And they're off chasing models that are not theirs because they were never meant to do that work. That's where confusion comes in. And so for us here, the next generation and global mission, that's the history of this church. So when they asked me if I come back, what would I do? Global mission and engaging the next generation. Because that's what this church has always done. And when it's been its strongest, it was doing those things well. And we're positioned to do it unlike anybody else. So let's do those things. But sometimes we shy away from our history, or we don't like our history, or we want somebody else's history. And so, you know, we try to do these things. And when it doesn't work, my simple question often is, well, why would that work there? You've never done that before. You know, you've never been about, you know, you know, digital ministry has never been a thing for you in the history of church. You've never been an innovative place. Why do you think you'd be at the forefront of innovation now? That's not a criticism. It's just a reality that you go, what are the things that you uniquely are doing well? And then how would you do those better than anyone else?
Yeah, just like context matters, DNA and identity like matter. Mm. And you don't always keep that same trajectory, but I think oftentimes that you do. And so that's a good word. Mm. I appreciate you like sharing that, and appreciate you making the time today as we talk about like how do churches make decisions in a healthy way. So appreciate you making time, especially in a busy life and after some travel and recovery from that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's been great to chat about this.
It's awesome, man. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening. We encourage you to keep the conversation going. Voices in the Wilderness is brought to you by Preparing for Amazement Ministries, where we empower and equip churches and leaders to create lasting and transformational health. Visit amazed15.org to learn more. Again, we welcome any comments or suggestions for topics or guests. Simply email us at podcast@amazed15.org.